You're going to love this. Just love it.
If you can believe it. I don't know that I can. This world is getting strange.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A., in Oregon on 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Central Coast, and 106.7 FM Queso in Cottage Grove, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania on 93 FM WLRI, in Hawaii on 88.5 FM KAKU, the voice of Maui, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN 94.1 FM, the Green Renaissance Network. And yes, now up in upstate New York, on in Palinville, New York, 102.9 FM WLPP. Glad y'all are on board. And in Minneapolis, St. Paul on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Also streaming coast to coast and around the globe on the internets, a series of tubes on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR, Revolution 99, Detour Talk, Radio Monterey, and Radio Sputnik, blanketing planet Earth 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow. From bradblog.com, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us. Desi Doyen. Hi, Des. How are you? I hope you had a lovely weekend.
It's been busy.
It has been busy, and it has been bizarre. It is so bizarre what is going on. I've been on radio, I don't know how many years, doing this program and other people's guest hosting in the years prior. I have never seen anything like what is going on this election cycle. I don't know what, I don't know how to make sense of it. I'm trying to figure it out as we go. But then, you know, that's as the theme song there says, trying to make some sense of it all. But I can see it makes no sense at all. But
that's
Yeah, but I will continue to try to figure out what the hell is going on in these United States. Over the weekend, it was the 51st anniversary of the Voting Rights Act, the key seminal landmark of federal Voting Rights Act from 1965, signed by Lyndon B. Johnson, which really changed the course of elections in this country. Finally, after about 100 years since emancipation, made it so that African Americans actually could participate in their electoral system. And it used to be, for decades, a bipartisan favorite of both the Republicans and the Democrats alike, the Voting Rights Act, until recent years, until the demographics, really since Obama, just started changing in such a way that Republicans began freaking out. They would pretend to support the Voting Rights Act, as almost all of them did when George W. Bush
was president,
but signed
the reauthorization
for 25 years that passed almost unanimously in both houses of Congress. And then Barack Obama came around, started winning elections, and started seeing huge turnout of African Americans. And oh no, we got to do something about that. So the Voting Rights Act goes to the Supreme Court, and sure enough, the Supreme Court guts the Voting Rights Act, guts the most important, the key element, the central element of the Voting Rights Act that required preclearance for certain new election laws in certain jurisdictions around the country, jurisdictions which had a long history of racial discrimination. And rather than fixing the problem that happened after the Supreme Court's ruling, Republicans have not wanted to talk about it at all. The same Republicans who used to pretend they love the Voting Rights Act, they haven't talked about it at all. They won't have a hearing on it. They won't figure out how to fix what the Supreme Court broke based on a right-wing challenge to the Voting Rights Act. But every now and again, the Voting Rights Act, they can't ignore it. They have to say something about it because, as we saw over the weekend, it was the 51st anniversary of the Voting Rights Act. And this is actually last year when they issued their statement for the 50th anniversary. And I don't know if they've made any statement or not this year. For the 51st anniversary. But last year, on their website at GOP.com, written by someone called Black Republicans, mind you, not by Reince Priebus, the chair of the Republican Party, but somebody called Black Republicans. So they put out this statement. That Ann's short statement, and claiming it comes from Reince Priebus, at the end of which it says, the Voting Rights Act of 1965 enjoyed broad Republican support, but protecting citizens' right to vote in free and fair elections is not merely a Republican priority. Try not to laugh. It is an American priority. Today, as we enjoy more access to the polls through early absentee and weekend voting than in past decades, we celebrate the sacrifice, accomplishments, and memory of those who made it possible. And they got a strange way of celebrating it because in state after state, Republicans have been trying to make it harder to vote in every way possible by limiting early and absentee and weekend voting. And they continue to do that now around the country. They continue to do that. Most notably, they did that in North Carolina, where their omnibus election law just gutted all kinds of progressive advances that had been made in North Carolina. Yes, a southern state, but a progressive one until the Republicans took it over a few years ago for the first time since Reconstruction. Now, the law in North Carolina, as we had talked about over the past week, that omnibus election law got absolutely gutted, got the knees cut out from under it by the U.S. Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. A three-judge panel just went through one point after another, one provision after another, including the photo ID restrictions, ending same-day voter registration, limiting early voting, ending early registration where you could register to vote if you were 16 or 17 year old who would be 18 by the time Election Day came around. And the Republicans absolutely gutted it, and the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals has now restored it. And Republicans, the same Republicans who pretended to love the Voting Rights Act, those same Republicans are vowing to appeal the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. They're going to do something about it, no matter what. So we reported at the end of the month, last month, at the end of July, it was a unanimous panel of the U.S. Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals that struck down that voter suppression law, calling it the nation's worst since the Jim Crow era, which is what we called it when it was passed by North Carolina back in 2013. Here you've got the appellate court saying the same thing. They found in their rebuke, as Ernie Canning at bradblog.com reported over the weekend, that the state Republicans acted with racially discriminatory intent and targeted African Americans with almost surgical precision. So that was the end of last month. Days later, on August 3, as Canning reports and as anticipated, North Carolina filed a motion with that same court seeking a stay on that court's decision. Basically, they were saying, no, you can't stop this law now. We're too close to the election. And they relied on something that has become known as the Purcell Principle, which is the U.S. Supreme Court has recently sort of adopted this notion that you can't make last minute changes to election laws right before the election because it will cause chaos at the polling places. Poll workers won't know what to do. Now, mind you, we are still just under 100 days out. We're still about 3 months out from the general election. But North Carolina said, no, 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 we're going to appeal this this decision by this by these judges on the Fourth Circuit. And in any event, you need to hold off their decision. You need to stay that your decision because it's just too late before the election. We don't have time. We couldn't possibly, make all the changes that have been required based on the Fourth Circuit finding that North Carolina purposely acted with racially discriminatory intent in all of these provisions in the law. Sure, these might be racist laws, but still, it's too late to change them.
We have to be allowed to continue discriminating because it's too quick.
Because it'll cause chaos.
We can't have that.
Right. So that's what they did, last week, August 3rd, and then the very next day, that same Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals panel denied North Carolina's request to stay their injunction on that law. And they said, they noted that the reason, one of the reasons that they would not do it is that, quote, the state, North Carolina, assured us it would be able to comply with any order we issued by late July, unquote. And so, indeed, that was what they had said when they argued the case originally. As long as you guys decide one way or another by the end of July, we'll be cool with it. And then they turned around and said, yeah, we're not cool with it. It's too quick. We can't possibly change the law. And so, indeed, the three-judge panel on the court noted that it would actually violate that Purcell principle to allow this law to stay in place this year, because the state has already notified its voters that it will not ask them to show ID, to show photo ID when voting at the polling place, and that early voting will begin on October 20. So we are just months away. So they've already told the voters you won't need to have an ID. You can vote without an ID, and voting is going to start soon. So no, we don't have time to change that. The court also noted that, quote, the balance of equities heavily weighs against recalling the mandate or granting a stay because voters disenfranchised by a law enacted with discriminatory intent suffer irreparable harm far greater than any potential harm to the state. So all of that was made. The Fourth Circuit said, no, we're not going to stay our decision here. This law is not going to move forward, at least as far as we are concerned, because you, the state of North Carolina, already said it wouldn't be a problem, that you could handle it if we came out with our decision by late July. And sure enough, we came out with our decision in late July, in July 29. And now you're saying it will be too late? Well, that's exactly what the state's governor, Pat McCrory, who I know you're a huge fan of, Desi Doyen, former CEO of Duke
Energy, the polluting Duke Energy that polluted the water supply of Charleston.
One of the largest power companies, I think, in the country, if not the. He's now the governor of North Carolina. And after the Fourth Circuit said no, no, and no, on Friday, he put out a statement pretending that the state had never gave their own assurances about the timing. And he vowed to seek a stay from the U.S. Supreme Court. He said, quote, changing our state's election laws close to the upcoming election, including common sense voter ID, will create confusion for voters and poll workers. The court should have stayed their ruling, he said, which is legally flawed, factually wrong, and disparaging to our state. Therefore, by early next week, we will be asking the U.S. Supreme Court to stay the ruling of the Court of Appeals. So that's what the North Carolina now intends to do. They're going to try to get the U.S. Supreme Court to agree with them, basically on the basis of the Purcell principle that it's too late. Well, right now, we've got a 4-4 court with the death of Antonin Scalia. And so that means that if the Supreme Court, the eight justices can't agree and it's 4-4, then it stays with what the Fourth Circuit Court already decided. So that's the good news. But man, these Republicans will say anything and they will do anything. And oh, by the way, in the meantime, with that law cut down, that means it reverts election law now reverts to the old law in North Carolina, which means that instead of this statewide law that Republicans had tried to put in place, now a lot of these issues go back to a county by county level. And it used to be in the old days, before the Supreme Court had gutted the Voting Rights Act, it used to be that these laws in these jurisdictions, and many of them in North Carolina, were among those counties that with a history of racial discrimination, that many of those counties, if they made changes to their election law, they'd have to get it pre-approved by the federal government, by the U.S. Department of Justice, or by a panel on the D.C. District, Washington, D.C. District Court of Appeals. But now they don't have to because the Voting Rights Act is gutted. So now the law moves back to this county by county situation. Well, one of those counties is a place called Greensboro, North Carolina. Have you heard of it? Might ring a bell. On February 1, 1960, four African-American college students sat down at a lunch counter at Woolworth's in Greensboro, North Carolina, and politely asked for service. Their request was refused. When asked to leave, they remained in their seat, and their resistance and their peaceful sit-down demonstration helped ignite a youth-led movement challenging racial inequality throughout the South, beginning with that sit-down at the Woolworth lunch counter. Hundreds of students, civil rights organizations, churches, members of the community joined in. It was a six-month-long protest, and ultimately it led to the desegregation of the F.W. Woolworth lunch counter on July 25, 1960. That started in Greensboro. Well, now Greensboro gets to decide what they're going to do about early voting after the state of North Carolina had reduced early voting times that had been in place previously. They used to have something like 17 days, and the new law restricted it to 10 days. Well, with that that new law out of the way, Greensboro is going back and deciding. It's actually Guilford County. Greensboro is in Guilford County. So the Guilford County Board of Elections is now determining whether they will reduce the 2016 early voting plan from what the county had offered back in 2012. They are meeting on Monday to decide this. It's a three-person member board, and they will take up the idea of a plan that would cut by nearly half the number of early voting sites that were provided in 2012, including most sites inside of Greensboro. They will completely eliminate Sunday voting again, according to this proposal. And that was something that, is used by a lot of African-American churches. They call it Souls to the Polls Day. They will cut the popular site in the African-American community, the popular voting site in the African-American community at Barber Park. They will eliminate sites at UNC Greensboro and North Carolina A&T University. By the way, North Carolina A&T University, that's where those four African-American college students were from back in 1960. So they're holding a special meeting today in North Carolina to consider this plan by the two Republicans and the one, as well as a counterproposal from the one lone Democrat on the board in North Carolina. A majority vote will carry the day, and that will not have to be approved by the U.S. Department of Justice anymore because the Voting Rights Act has been gutted. So see how we've got good two steps forward, one step back. I don't know what's the old saying. One step forward, two steps back.
Yeah, that's it.
The fight continues. And this comes just 2 days after the 51st anniversary of the signing of the Voting Rights Act, which Republicans put out statements pretending to love. Pretending to love. This fight is going to continue. We've had a lot of really good voting rights news over the past several weeks from the courts, from both state and federal courts. But this fight is going to continue because now it's going to come down in a swing state like North Carolina, which barely went for Barack Obama back in 2008 and then barely went for Mitt Romney in 2012. Where's it going to go in 2016? Nobody knows. And that will be affected by what the rules are, by what the rules of access are to the polling places. North Carolina is just one example of how this fight is going on all over the country. But it's going to be, there's a lot of news, a lot of polls coming out showing Hillary Clinton doing really well against Donald Trump. And I know that a lot of Democrats are certainly delighted about that. But I would say be very, very careful as we move forward, because this is going to change. These guys are going to continue fighting. They're going to continue to lie about voting rights. The Republican Party establishment may hate Donald Trump, but they really realize they need there's a lot of races in both the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House of Representatives that they got to pay attention to, and they got to turn out their vote. They got to get their people out to vote, and they got to keep Democrats from Democratic leaning voters from being able to cast their votes. So no matter what you hear in these polls, including in these polls that I'm about to share with you, just in today from the Monmouth poll, Hillary Clinton is now at 50%, according to the Monmouth poll, to Donald Trump's 37%. That's a 13-point lead, Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump, among, quote, likely voters. And that, by the way, is in a four-way race, with the Libertarian and Green Party candidates included in that poll. A 13-point advantage for Hillary Clinton of likely voters. And this was taken just in the past few days, late last week and over the weekend. So this Hillary Clinton's lead had already, she got a bump from the convention after the Democratic convention. It appears to be continuing to grow. In that same poll, Clinton had held just a 2-point lead over Donald Trump before the Republican and Democratic convention. So she has bumped 15 points since the last Monmouth poll. And when you break it down, you start looking at some of these numbers are indeed kind of amazing. The University of Chicago PhD candidate Tenniel is what he calls himself on Twitter. He's a Daily Coast elections poll watcher and editor. He says Trump gets 10% of non-white respondents in the Monmouth poll. Just 10% of non-white respondents. Mitt Romney, who I will remind you, lost the election back in 2012. He got 18% of the non-white vote. Donald Trump is now getting 10. His favorability among non-white voters, says Tenniel, is a catastrophic 7%.
Wow.
Trump enjoys 7% favorability versus 75% unfavorability among non-white voters. Benji Sarlin over at NBC News notices that Donald Trump is down 50 to 37% in that Monmouth poll. He points to white women with college degrees. Romney won white women with college degrees by a 6-point margin. Trump is losing white women with college degrees by 30 points. Just amazing. The latest white voters overall, 52% support Trump, according to Washington Post. 43% support Trump, according to the Monmouth poll. Romney won 59%. He had 59% of the white peoples, and it was not enough to win back in 2012. So, obviously Democrats are delighted about this. Hillary Clinton is now averaging about 10 points over Donald Trump in national polls, in a bunch of separate polls. So this is not an outlier. But again, those are national polls. The only polls that matter are the state polls. We've got basically 50 different state elections for president that take place on election day. And on Friday, we had an interesting poll in from Georgia, and I didn't cover it on Friday because I thought, oh, it was only one poll. Basically, it was an Atlanta Journal-Constitution poll showing that Hillary Clinton was beating Donald Trump by 4 points in the state of Georgia, in the southern state of Georgia. So, all right, one poll, could be an outlier. It's a good poll. It's the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, but it's one poll. Well, now, according to a second poll now, a second survey, Hillary Clinton leads Donald Trump by 7 points in the state of Georgia, 44-37%. This is according to the JMC Analytics poll. This was released today, and it has Libertarian candidate Gary Johnson taking 7%. 10% are still undecided. Green Party candidate Jill Stein gets just 1% in this poll that has Hillary Clinton up by 7 over Donald Trump in the state of Georgia. Just amazing. She leads Trump 84-6% among black respondents in Georgia. Interestingly, Trump leads her among white respondents 52-25. So a big gap there. And all of that makes me begin to wonder about the Bradley effect. You know what the Bradley effect is?
I do, but why don't you say it again?
All right. Well, it's not about me. It's got nothing to do with me. But the Tom Bradley, the first mayor of
Los Angeles
back in the, was it the 80s, I guess? He was expected to win. It's got different, this effect has different names in different parts of the country. But out here in Southern California, Tom Bradley was expected, according to the polls, to win big time. When he was running for, when he first ran for mayor, he ended up losing. And the supposition was that Tom Bradley, who was African-American, who would be the first African-American, did become eventually the first African-American mayor of L.A., that people basically lied to the pollsters. They said, yeah, we support him. But then they went in and voted against him. So it's starting to make me wonder.
Yeah, they're too embarrassed to admit that they're actually
going
to vote for him because he's a black man.
Starting to make me wonder, could this be going on in the poll? And I was wondering this over the past day or two, and now I'm seeing people starting to talk about it online in various places. So maybe we'll talk a little bit about it in the future. But, you know, if any of this is going on, are people lying to pollsters? They are embarrassed because Donald Trump has been so embarrassing, they don't want to tell the pollsters that, yeah, I'm going to vote for Trump. They don't tell them, and that skews the numbers. Could that be going on? I don't know that we have any evidence of that, and I'm not actually sure how you even get evidence of that, to be frank. It's kind of scary. But could that be going on here, or do people just hate Donald Trump that much? Are they that ashamed of him that not only will they not, tell pollsters they're going to vote for him, but they also, when they go into the polling place, they're not going to vote for them? Well, we've got evidence that that is the case, too, that, yes, Republicans, at least certain old school Republican establishment Republicans of all types now, really, really, really do not like Donald Trump. And they are really, really concerned about him becoming president of these United States. Oh, and there's also a new guy in the race. Yeah, really? Sort of. Kind of. That story and more much next on the broadcast. Much next. Coming up next on the broadcast. I told you I'm confused. Anyway, stick around. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't go away. Welcome back to your broadcast. So bizarre. So bizarre. We'll get back to the some election stuff in a moment. Actually, this is sort of part of the election stuff. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com here with the delightful Desi Doyen sitting next to us. Des, and I suspect we may cover some of this in our next Green News report, but now Macedonia. Parts of Macedonia is flood deaths have now risen to 21 following powerful storms and floods that collapsed homes and left at least 21 people dead, according to state-run media on Sunday. In one day or less, some residents experienced more than three times the rainfall they normally receive in a month, according to CNN meteorologists. More rain is possible in the region, with a significant chance for showers during the rest of the week. Six people are still missing. Landslides from the storms have left about 70 vehicles unable to move on highways. non-governmental organization worker who lives and works in the capital of Macedonia said that the infrastructure is just not good enough for this kind of rain. Sound familiar, Desi Doyen?
Yes, we have been talking about how important it is to understand what your risks actually are so you can build your infrastructure appropriately.
In this warming climate, this is, again, one day or less, residents experienced more than three times the rainfall they normally receive in a month. We saw the same thing happen last week in Phoenix, Arizona. We saw the same last week and just a few days earlier up in Maryland.
Yeah. Right. And before that, you know, Charleston, South Carolina, Pensacola, Florida, you know, in the last several years, we've definitely seen a verified trend toward more extreme downpours, more frequent and more extreme. And that's the question. You know, now we don't know for sure. It's probably too early to tell, you know, what the actual climate change fingerprint is on this particular storm in Macedonia. The attribution is something that takes some time and some data to calculate, but it does show that it's important.
I'm calling it.
It's important to get your building codes right, and it's important to get your, regulations right.
Well, exactly. And spend money on infrastructure preparing for what is coming, preparing for what is here, which you noted last week, Des, that they had done that up in Maryland. They had built flood walls, that this was in a location that is prone to this sort of flooding when the weather gets bad. So they improved their infrastructure and they spent a lot of money doing it. And it was not enough. That new infrastructure was already overrun. And that's why just one of the reasons, but I would argue perhaps the biggest reason why this election coming up matters. By the way, we saw down in Mexico over the weekend, a flash flooding hit in Mexico, a number of places as Hurricane Earl moved, has now been downgraded to a tropical depression, but it was a hurricane. It slammed Mexico over the weekend. Six people were killed there. The remnants of Earl are expected to produce an additional 2 to 4 inches of rainfall over portions of Mexico over the next few days. These rains, the National Hurricane Center warns, could result in life-threatening flash floods and mudslides. We are seeing more and more and more of this. We're going to keep reporting on it more and more because so few people do. So, you know, they get into these elections, they get into these horse races. They don't talk about the track conditions for the elections themselves, much less the reason why these elections are so important. And to some extent, I kind of get it when you're talking about Donald Trump, because he is so insane. And, you know, every little thing he does, people, can you believe he did that? Can you believe he did that? But what that means is they're not talking about the issues. They're not talking about why it's actually important to make sure Donald Trump never becomes the president of the United States. And just one of them, look, even if, and I was speaking with a climate scientist over the weekend, maybe we'll be talking to them on the program soon, but even if it was Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders who became president, we would have a very difficult time dealing with what we are now facing on climate change because we have taken so goddamn long to do anything about it, to take action on it. We have wasted, essentially, the bulk of the last 8 years because Republicans refuse to do anything that might hurt their fossil fuel friends who fund everything that they do. So even if Hillary Clinton wins this year, even if it had been Bernie Sanders, we would still have a hell of a time facing what we are going to face in the next few generations. And we're not talking about it. It is not being discussed. We're not talking about these things, why these issues matter, because we're so amazed with, can you believe Donald Trump had crying babies, threw out a baby out of his rally? I guess I get it. I guess I understand it. I guess it's easy to cover. But this stuff matters. You know who else has noticed that it? Well, we'll get to that in a second. There is now another candidate supposedly getting in this race here. Anti-Trump conservatives, people who call themselves conservatives, have now recruited some guy, a former CIA staffer, a top House GOP aide, to launch an independent White House bid to challenge Donald Trump in some fashion. Evan McMullen is this guy's name. And I guess he's being put forward by these dead-ender never-Trumpers, trying to find some Republican that they can put up. Now, they got Gary Johnson and Bill Weld, who are running on the Libertarian Party ticket, so I'm not sure why not support them? Why not vote for them? But they want to make sure that Republican races and down-ticket races, that they don't get killed there. A lot of these states where you can vote straight ticket, I guess that's what this is about. But he won't even be a Republican. He'll be independent. So I'm not even sure what the hell this is all about. McMullen's campaign, I guess he's got a campaign now, wrote in a message to supporters that it's never too late to do the right thing, and if we work together, there's nothing we can't achieve. Nobody's ever heard of this guy. Evan has spent his entire career in service to our nation, and today he's continuing on that path as a candidate for president. He's running first and foremost out of a deep love for this country and because he understands a true brand of American leadership that is required to be commander-in-chief. McMullen's presence, CNN reports, could be felt mostly in states like Utah, where anti-Trump conservatives, hate that they call them conservative, anyway, anti-Trump Republicans, okay? They're not conservatives, they're Republicans, rallied behind Ted Cruz in the primaries, and McMullen has now 1 week to make it onto the ballot in Utah, where Ted Cruz had beat Donald Trump by a huge number in the primary, 69-14 in Utah, after Mitt Romney had come out and urged Republicans in the Mormon heavy state to fight against Trump. Well, now trying to give them someone to show up and vote for. So if he can get on the ballot in Utah, maybe that will help some of the down ticket Republicans. And ultimately, it will probably hurt Trump and could possibly throw the state of Utah to Hillary Clinton, who, by the way, has already been doing well in the state of Utah because that's how much they hate Donald Trump in Utah. So McMullen, he put out a statement. Let's see. Hillary Clinton is a corrupt career politician who has recklessly handled classified information in an attempt to avoid accountability and put American lives at risk, blah, blah, blah. Also of Donald Trump. Donald Trump appeals to the worst fears of Americans, McMullen says, at a time when we need unity, not division. Republicans are deeply divided by a man who is perilously close to gaining the most powerful position in the world, and many rightly see him as a real threat to our republic. I am one of them who see him as a real threat to our Republican. Republic, which is why it's very strange for me to have to also agree with a whole bunch of these George W. Bush people. 50 of the nation's most senior Republican national security officials, many of them former top aides or cabinet members for President George W. Bush, have now signed a letter declaring that Donald Trump lacks the character, values, and experience to be president and would, quote, put at risk our country's national security and well-being. Mr. Trump, the officials warn, would be the most reckless president in American history. The letter says that Trump would weaken the United States' moral authority and questions his knowledge of and belief in the Constitution, according to David Sanger over at the New York Times. The letter says he has, quote, demonstrated repeatedly that he has little understanding of the nation's vital interests, its complex diplomatic challenges, its indispensable alliances, and the democratic values on which American policy should be based. And it laments that Mr. Trump has shown no interest in educating himself. None of us, the letter says, will vote for Donald Trump, though it notes later that many Americans, quote, have doubts about Hillary Clinton, as do many of us. And so this is a whole bunch of actually George W. Bush people. Michael Hayden, the former director of both the CIA and the National Security Agency, signed on to this. John Negroponte, who served as the first director of national intelligence, and then he became deputy secretary of state. Robert Zoellick, another former deputy secretary of state. Two former secretaries of Homeland Security, Tom Ridge and Michael Chertoff, both Homeland Security directors under George W. Bush. They signed on to this thing. key strategists in the National Security Council, including William Taft, former deputy secretary and an ambassador to NATO. He signed on. Missing from the signatories, however, are any of the living Republican former secretaries of state. Henry Kissinger didn't sign. George Shultz, James Baker, Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, though a whole bunch of Condoleezza Rice's people signed on to this thing. People who worked for her and with her. John Bellinger, who served as her legal advisor at the National Condi Rice's National Security Council and her advisor over at the State Department, said that apparently he was the one who drafted this letter. He said that among the signatories, some will vote for Mrs. Clinton. Some will not vote, but all agree Trump is not qualified, would be dangerous. Goes on to say he is unable or unwilling to separate truth from falsehood. He does not encourage conflicting views. He lacks self-control and acts impetuously. He cannot tolerate personal criticism. He has alarmed our closest allies with his erratic behavior. All of these dangerous qualities in an individual who aspires to be president and commander-in-chief with command of the U.S. nuclear arsenal. Wow. Never seen anything like this. Yes,
it's remarkable. It is unlike any other election that I know you've ever covered, that I've ever covered, that, you know, in living memory, it seems. But the question is that kind of letter going to have any impact whatsoever on the base of voters that love Donald Trump? That are the ones who are activized to get out and get out to the vote.
No way to know. Yeah. Everyone's guessing. You can take the polls for what they are. And you said, Des, in living memory, never heard anything like this in living memory. Never mind living memory. Go back to 1888. The Harvard Republican Club was founded in 1888. It's the oldest college Republican chapter in the country. Its website now says that for the first time in the history of the Harvard Republican Club, they will not support the Republican nominee for president. The website says that the club exists to, quote, promote Republican principles, policies, and candidates, and their members are proud of their rich history of Republican advocacy. But now they say they will not vote for Donald Trump, that he is, quote, a threat to the survival of the United States.
Meow.
They polled the Harvard Crimson talked to them, found out they polled their members, and 10% of those members said that they would support Trump, but 80% said they would not. Another 10% were undecided. And the letter is actually quite amazing. Do I have any time? Well, I'll just give you a taste of it. For the first time in 128 years, we, the oldest college Republicans chapter in the nation, will not be endorsing the Republican nominee. Donald Trump holds views that are antithetical to our values, not only as Republicans, but as Americans. The rhetoric he espouses, from racist slander to misogynist taunts, is not consistent with our conservative principles, and his repeated mocking of the disabled, belittling of sacrifices made by prisoners of war, Gold Star families, Purple Heart recipients, is not only bad politics, but it's absurdly cruel, they say. They say that his platform would endanger our security both at home and abroad. Donald Trump's foreign policy would wreak havoc on the established world order, which has held aggressive foreign policies, foreign powers in check since World War II. Perhaps most importantly, however, Donald Trump simply does not possess the temperament and character necessary to lead the United States through an increasingly perilous world. He isn't eschewing political correctness. He's eschewing basic human decency. He's a threat to the survival of the republic. His authoritarian tendencies and flirtation with fascism are unparalleled in the history of our democracy. And then they stick the knife in and turn it here. President Ronald Reagan would be ashamed of Donald Trump. We are too. They urge fellow college Republicans to join us in condemning and withholding their endorsement from this dangerous man. And they say that our party's elected leaders should renounce their support of Donald Trump. But very few of them are. And I would add, one of the reasons is Because what Donald Trump is saying, you know, and they're all, you know, wringing their hands about what Donald Trump is saying, what Donald Trump is doing, how reckless he is, and everything else. But you know what? He's really just saying what the Republican Party themselves have been saying and doing over the past at least 8 years now. I'd go back.
I'd go back decades even for this.
Farther. So they're pretending because now he's saying it out loud, because now he's, you know, no longer doing the dog whistle. He's actually just saying what it is they believe in instead of lying about it, instead of like that statement from quote unquote black Republicans that I read at the top of the show from Reince Priebus, pretending he gives a damn about the Voting Rights Act, pretending that he's concerned that he wants more voting opportunities, early voting, absentee voting, all of this stuff. He's just, Donald Trump is just saying the stuff out loud. And these people are shocked at what they are hearing. They are shocked at what they are seeing in their own mirror. And Donald Trump is their own mirror. And they haven't figured out that part yet. They think what he's doing is shocking and appalling, and how dare he, and oh, what a dangerous menace he is. He has no temperament. He has no temperament because he says the stuff they're already thinking, but he says it out loud. Well, we can't have that. Susan Grigsby over at Daily Kos over the weekend, she wrote, "The Trump lacks anything close to the temperament or judgment needed in a man wielding the nuclear codes, and for that reason alone, he should be barred from the Oval Office. However," she notes, "his policies are all mainstream Republican policies. From building a wall," remember John McCain ran and said, "Well, build the dang fence." So now they're all upset because it's a wall? Instead of, well, a fence, that was one thing, but now not a wall. To, you know, from building a wall, she writes, to vilifying Hillary Clinton, from exacerbating the pain of a Gold Star family. They all act like they're shocked about what Donald Trump did to the cons after the, you know, after the Democratic convention. The Mr. Mrs. Khan, whose son was killed, the Muslim American Captain Humayun Khan, who was killed in Iraq in 2004. Oh, I can't believe they're going after this Gold Star family. Do these people not remember how they went after Cindy Sheehan, who lost her son? How they went after her endlessly and right-wing media attacked her? And not just right-wing media, but inside the Bush administration, calling Cindy Sheehan a media whore. Do they not remember that? Do they not know that we were there? That we were literally there? That we literally heard it? That the reason actually that I went down to Crawford, Texas back in the summer of 2005 to report on Cindy Sheehan's stand down there was because I heard her being disparaged on the radio by Rush Limbaugh and so forth. And I had already known Cindy Sheehan because we had her on this program and interviewed her. After the Republicans had refused to allow any hearings, refused to allow Democrats to have hearings to figure out what the hell, why the hell we went to Iraq and why the hell there were no weapons of mass destruction there as we were promised there would be. And Cindy Sheehan testified at that time. We had her on the show. And then she went down and made her stand down there in Crawford, Texas, trying to get an answer from George W. Bush as to what was the noble cause for which her son died, as George W. Bush had claimed that all of those people had died for a noble cause. And they disparaged the hell out of her. So this stuff is not new. This stuff is not like, oh, my God, these Republicans, I can't believe he's saying that Donald Trump is saying he wants to build a wall. Well, yeah, they wanted to build a fence. He's attacking Hillary Clinton. Well, that's what they've done for 25 years. They're attacking Gold Star families. That's what they did with Cindy Sheehan. Anybody who disagreed with them. So anyway, Grigsby goes on to note over at Daily Kos, exacerbating the pain of Gold Star family to his discussion of how he would default on our debt with the same insouciance of the congressman who would refuse to lift the debt limit because the occupant of the White House happens to be a black Democrat. That's exactly what the Republicans did last year, year after year after year. They were, you know, threatening our debt. And now they're shocked. Republicans are shocked because Donald Trump said, maybe we won't pay off our all of our debts. Maybe people who bought U.S. Bonds will have to take a haircut. This is the Republican core. She writes, he is Republican to the core. He is the epitome of what the Republican Party has become. He's right. She's right. He absolutely is, which is why we knew on day one that Donald Trump was going to do very well. Not because I've got some magic secret, but because I've been paying attention to who Republicans are and what Republicans have become over these past 10, 20 years now. How would anybody be surprised about Donald Trump's success? How would any Republican be shocked about the things that Donald Trump is saying? He's saying exactly what Republicans believe, which is why he remains a danger, which is why Republicans are still voting for this guy, which is why it's even close at, what's the new Monmouth poll, 13 points. It shouldn't even be 13 points if Donald Trump was as crazy as those Republicans are, you know, suddenly think that he is. Oh, my gosh, we don't want to have anything to do with him. It should be 30%. Where are all those people who endorsed Donald Trump? Paul Ryan, John McCain, who all endorsed or are supporting Donald Trump. They're not withdrawing their support. They're not withdrawing their endorsements. They're not reversing that, are they? No, they're not. Because when it comes down to it, it's party first, country second. Actually, maybe it's funders first, party second. I'm not even sure where the hell country comes on their list. So now they're worried. Now Donald Trump has his hands on the nuclear button. And I had been thinking about that over the past few days, how, you know, they're worried about his hands on the, you know, his finger on the button. I'm worried about Donald Trump's finger on the planet. And so I was happy to see David Atkins writing over at Washington Monthly over the weekend. In this respect, Donald Trump doesn't represent a greater threat to climate security than almost any other Republican would have been. Even the mainstream GOP is dangerously reckless in ignoring our climate crisis, but Trump is a willfully ignorant climate denier who actively campaigns on drilling more oil faster. 4 to 8 years of a Trump presidency could easily lock in temperatures, planetary temperatures that could temperature rises that could, without exaggeration, reach levels that doom human civilization within a couple of generations. Yes, Donald Trump is a threat to this planet, to this country, even if he doesn't light off a nuclear weapon, as he has suggested he would be quite interested in doing. He's a threat to this planet, period. All of these Republicans, unfortunately, represent that very same threat. But let's, you know what, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. I know I'm running late as usual. We'll take a quick break. A little bit more Bradcast when we get back. I'm Brad. I don't know where we're going. I'm Brad Friedman. Stay tuned.
How bizarre. How bizarre. How bizarre.
Looking around over the weekend. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Over the weekend, this was very bizarre. I know we've got just a few minutes. I'll hold that. We'll hold that. That Noam Chomsky does for another day. As a matter of fact, I think we'll talk to Ernie Canning soon, who's a big supporter of Bernie Sanders, and trying to figure out where to go from here. He posted a piece you may want to read. At bradblog.com called Crossroads Revolution at a Crossroad. And so hopefully we'll be talking to him about that and talking about, you know, what do Bernie Sanders, diehard, hardcore Bernie Sanders, what do they do moving forward given the threat presented by Donald Trump? In any event, for now, since I just got a minute here, this bizarre guy, Sean O'Loughlin is his name. He's been posting these things via PR Newswire, which is a newswire service. Basically, you pay them and they'll run your whatever, wherever you want to run it. whatever article or news item, press release, whatever it is. He's got this one called Dear America that came out over the weekend. He writes, I am one of 11 people who donated the maximum amount under law to Donald Trump during the primaries. I am very conservative when it comes to issues related to the United States Constitution, supporting law enforcement and lowering taxes for businesses to grow. However, when it comes to social issues, I am probably more liberal and progressive than most Americans. He goes on to say how he believes that abortion is morally wrong, but it should be up to women to do what they want, and that gay people should be allowed to be married. And then you'll like this, Desi. He says, when people on the news call Donald Trump a racist, I find that statement difficult to believe. Like myself, Donald Trump is a lifelong New Yorker. Donald Trump lives, works, eats, and employs people of all races and religions.
Wait, what?
Apparently, Donald Trump eats people of all races and religions.
Okay. Oh my God.
According to this guy, Sean O'Loughlin, who says he makes it sound like he's a journalist. He says Sean O'Loughlin is a member of the United States Press Agency and the U.S. Press Association. So he's claims to be, I guess, here a journalist. And then he writes that Donald Trump lives, works, eats, and employs people of all races and religions.
Well, I'd say that's news that Donald Trump is a cannibal.
Yeah. Not to mention news that this U.S. United States Press Agency and the U.S. Press Associate never heard of them. So I looked them up. The United States Press Agency looks like it's got all of this stock photos of people holding up a card, which apparently they've inserted a press credentials card. So if you want to have press credentials, all you have to do is give $108, a one-time registration fee, to the United States Press Agency, and there you go. You're a journalist.
Wow.
Yeah. And the same thing on this U.S. Press Association membership, annual membership, $48, so that you can pretend to be a journalist. You can pretend to have media credentials, and you can go out there. And this is what this Sean O'Loughlin guy, he's been putting these things out via PR Newswire. In the other one, he's a headline, Trump economics mean more jobs and better pay by Dr. Sean. Now he's a doctor. Dr. Sean O'Loughlin, Esquire. So he's a doctor and he's an attorney. And he's a journalist. This is crazy. He's just putting these things out, trying to, I guess, hoping that folks in the media will fall for it and run this stuff as if it's actually news. Good luck with that, Donald. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, today, and to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other, download it at bradblog.com for free. No annual membership required. You're welcome. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the Facebooks and the Twitters, I am The Brad Blog. Until we meet again, until we eat again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.